to the issue of environmentalism. There's a lot of environmentalist groups out there today sounding alarms about potential hazards and issues and so on and so forth. And the question is being raised, what's the position of Judaism on this? I'm not, to start with, I just have to mention, I'm not really an expert on all the particularities. So in dealing with questions, I may need some explanation as to what exactly they're, what they stand for as a particular. I do have a word of caution about these types of groups in general. That in general, this is not an indictment of any particular group. You always have to look and find out the facts for yourself. But just, you have some general characteristics. There's a lot of these groups out there today. It's a very popular phenomenon. But people are involved in a tremendous amount of self-deception. And many people have a lot of aggression. And they're looking for an outlet for their aggression. And one of the most attractive outlets for people to express and satisfy their egotistical sense of superiority and to put down others and to have an outlet for their aggression is through the mechanism of idealism. Good intentions are a very dangerous thing. Idealism is a very aggressive phenomenon. Unless we're talking about genuine idealism, which by and large, in my opinion, hardly exists. I don't think it exists in the world today, except very, very, very rare circumstances. So the words of Chazal are very instructive. Kabdeu v'chashdeu. Respect him and suspect him. You go through this nonsense every election time, every candidate is out there. God knows how a person has devoted his whole life, and all he cares about is public service, and people get worked up, and people fall into the same trap. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, they're either, this is the new hero. Forget about the fact that every previous hero has failed, and then, this is the new mafia boss, this one's different. And it has to be put into perspective, obviously, because I'm not saying that people that run for president or all politicians are evil. But an intelligent person, when you hear these kinds of things, I have any. Now there's going to be coming out to the next little candidate. So the Democrats are going to be lining up. Because the Republicans are going to be Bush, probably, obviously. So when they first line up, everyone is going to be a tzaddik and righteous and all of everything. He's done his whole life, he's done nothing but help people. Totally devoted to public service. So I'm not going to take an extreme response here and just negate. These people are all phony. It's also not the correct way. It's not the correct way, because it's not true. There's elements of truth. See, I don't want to go to an extreme over here, but you have to have an intelligent reaction, and that is my intelligent reaction will be respect him and suspect him. I don't think gay people, that's from the Gemara. It's a very, very brilliant piece of philosophy to guide yourself by. In many, many situations. It doesn't apply to all situations. I wouldn't extend that to the PLO. But that is to say, don't be a fool. Don't believe all things. That's how the world people get taken advantage of. All the time. The same is true with so many of these movements today. I'm not saying how they started. Oh, they started out. I don't care how they started out. It doesn't mean anything. They started out, but then, if they started out and then became corrupt, it means that there was a corruption there all the time. It's just that when they started out, they didn't have the opportunity. They couldn't afford to be greedy and corrupt because they were struggling to get some kind of recognition, so they had to do good deeds. You see this with a lot of these different movements. Let's pause for a moment. There's an organization called PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Now, I'm definitely in favor of the ethical treatment of animals. I'm definitely opposed to any kind of animal torture. It's prohibited according to the Torah. It's our Baal HaChaim. It's not a new idea. However, I don't know that anybody who's a serious observer of the Torah and who reviewed, would do whatever they could because they knew that a person was engaged in Tzar Baal HaChaim, causing affliction, suffering to animals, to go around and use that as an excuse to spray paint or to damage people's property, to destroy their barcodes and all kinds of things. It's an interesting phenomenon. These are idealists. So in the name of idealism, what you really see is not true idealism, but there's a tremendous amount of anger and aggressiveness and destructiveness, and they utilize this. They have a very, very shallow understanding of true ethics, of true ideals, and in their mind, they're perfectly permitted to do what they do. They can inflict all kinds of suffering on people because that's the ideal. Like, they pick this as their ideal. That's it. That overrides everything else. There's no other issue in the world except their concept of how one should treat animals. To the extent that this movement actually goes so far as to equate animals to people, and they're putting animals on the same level as people, and want to accord animals the same type of rights, that is to say that you can't use animals for food, you can't slaughter cows for food, for meat, this is sheer insanity. So that very premise shows you that it's completely irrational. And if something is irrational, it can't be an ideal. Yeah, an ideal has to be something. An ideal has to be, first of all, that's another thing people make a mistake. If what they're doing is crazy, but they're ideals. People accord people a certain level, certain righteousness, because they're idealists. Now, it doesn't matter whether the ideal is a true ideal or a false ideal, which to me is absolutely absurd. What's the value of idealism if you're pursuing false ideals? False ideals have been much more destructive to the world than anything else. Most of the fighting for their ideals, for the Muslims fighting for their ideals, the Nazis are fighting for their ideals. I mean, virtually everybody is an idealist. So idealism is a very dangerous kind of thing. Idealism, when it's misused, gives this person an ego. We all have the sense of egotism, of self-righteousness, but beyond self-righteousness, of the magnification of the self, which serves as an excuse of rationalization. The next thing is the aggression against those who don't want it, who don't get it. They're the inferior ones. They don't get the idealism. They don't get it, so we have no choice. We have to use force in order to bring about the ideal. That's the way it works. By and large, most of these groups that are claiming to have a certain cause, to have a certain type of an idealism, are exceedingly, exceedingly suspect. Because in order to be an idealist, you first have to have the truth. And none of these people ever bothered to take time to study what the truth is, to test out their ideas. And you can go to any campus, go to Columbia University. I've given classes, groups, you know, groups there. But when you see, I just noticed the activity, all this plastered on the wall, all the different political groups are meeting, this and that, the gay forum and the lesbian this and the socialist that, and you know, everybody, you think that these are kids that are just out of high school, know absolutely nothing. I would assume that now's the time to study them, and yet they're immediately thrown into all kinds of political action, but with a sense of certainty that the whole world is crazy. They're the agenda, they know, they have knowledge, and they're going to fight and burning idealists. They're burning idealists. Burn down the house. You can't be an idealist. How can you be an idealist if you don't know anything?
If you don't have an idea.
Yeah, well, no. What they claim to be an ideal is absurd, because first you have to discover its truth. If it's truth, then it can become an ideal. And even if you have an idea, what you're permitted to do in furtherance of your ideal, what you're not permitted to do is something else has to be studied. Immediate experts. You can see from the aggressiveness. Now, for the fact, I'll tell you something else about these things, that it's one thing to be rational. There's a certain rational concern we should have to the environment. But you see that there's a phenomenon of extremism over here. Like anything else, people can't live rationally. Vegetarianism. What's this vegetarianism? If you have a point that excessive amounts of meat can be harmful, and so on and so forth, and therefore one should make some changes in one's diet nutritionally and have more vegetables and all that, fine, that's normal. But now vegetarianism, that becomes an ism. Once you hear that ism thing, watch out. Project. Those, I asked them those most dangerous letters in the English language. Isms are very dangerous. And environmentalism. Once it becomes an ism, and feminism, there are legitimate issues that women have. I'm not to deny that. They fought. They didn't have the right to vote over 100 years ago. And to be in certain occupations, professions, and they were denied many of their rights. That's an injustice. But you speak to some of them, you see that it's very narrow. Their whole view, every aspect of history is basically revolves around men oppressing women. That's the whole thing. Everything is an oppression. Then you know that the person's gone to an extreme. Right? Person's constitution is a nut. That's not the truth. You generally tend to find this among victimized people. Victimization is the worst thing in the world. That word, the phenomenon of a victim, the most dangerous people in the universe are victims. Victims. Take these minorities, or blacks, or other groups that have this adopted this concept of victimhood, forget it, there's just no way. Their mind is destroyed. And the Arabs are victims. The Arabs have become, they're the chief victims of the world right now. That's why there's all of this terrorism, all of this destructiveness. This is not a trivial phenomenon I'm talking about. It all revolves around this phenomenon of being the victims. Because aside from an idealist, and perhaps even, I'm not saying the second, maybe he's even the most aggressive, the most destructive force in the world are the victims. One thing you'll see about the Jews, but you'll see it in Shrine, is very significant, is that everything was structured in such a way that the Jews should never develop, never cultivate a mentality of victims. That's one of the miracles, even after the Holocaust. No other group in history. See, the blacks can't get over their experience of enslavement because of victims. To the extent that there are those that do, they themselves will argue, we've got to get out of this mentality of being victims. And forget about that. Let's compete and let's do the best we can. We'll overcome the handicaps, and you can't remove racism from the world, but you can deal with it, which is a very intelligent attitude. And those who adopt that attitude, black, white, whatever it is, they succeed. But those who are locked into this psychology of victim can't move. And the Jews, who underwent the worst torture, the worst suffering, whatever anyone wants to say, you can't compare the Holocaust to any other kind of oppression. The blacks or anybody else. But the Jews, because we did not have that type of a culture to cultivate victimhood, a sense of victimhood, they were scarred, no doubt about it. There's a Holocaust phenomenon in surviving, but they came to this country, they worked hard, they rebuilt from scratch, and they became very successful. The major problem of the world of terror in the Arabic world that we face today is rooted in this psychology of victimhood. They're totally engulfed in victimhood, and the victim is there's no restraint. Again, that's the same thing. It ties into this idealistic phenomenon. You have a mafia to do anything and everything. We are the victims, and that you see how the world justifies it. Not just the Arabs defending the suicide bombing. They go through the motions of condemning. Yeah, we're against terrorism, but you must understand that people whose country has been occupied. Oh, country's been occupied. Oh, that's right. That gives me an excuse to just blow up and, let's go bombing them. But occupied, there's other forces in my country. Country's occupied. Hey, but you hear this even in Europe? Anti-Semitic. England, France, Germany. Goes without saying. There is this equivalence, this type of thing. Victims. As long as you can prove you're a victim, you can, they're not going to say we don't condone it, but it's absolute nonsense. Because they are accepting that there's something there, there's some kind of justification. So idealism and victimhood are the two greatest enemies of mankind, especially in the 20th century. I'll show you one more case. Just let's make a real controversy. To show you that these purported idealists are basically phonies. They don't have the capacity to be honest about themselves. They don't. They don't analyze, they don't seek the truth, they just latch onto a cause, and the temptation of having an acceptable means of torturing other people, of expressing their aggression, takes over. On a rather simple note, anti-smokers. Anti-smokers. A real hateful type of people. You can tell them, because there is a legitimate issue. I'm not denying it. Smoking is a dangerous phenomenon. I'm not in favor of abolishing it. I wouldn't abolish it. But because it's in and of itself it's a legitimate activity, and people have to know that it has the potential for danger, and in a free society, people should be able to make that choice. That's my opinion. But there are those who are opposed to it. When you see, it then becomes way, way, way beyond any proportion, anything that has to do with rationality. The idea of closing, of prohibiting, I think I'm banned now. On privately owned institutions, you have a restaurant, you have a bar, and so on. Now you become like a fascist, like you become a dictator, and it's really interfering with principles of freedom. And in a free country, you have a right to have it. I would say as follows. You have a right to open an establishment, a restaurant, and if you do not want smoking in that restaurant, you have a right, you should have the right to say no smoking in this restaurant. And enforce it, because it's your property. On the other hand, you have a right to say, in my restaurant, smoking is permitted. And then what do people do? So the smokers go to this restaurant, and non-smokers go to that one. I don't see where there's any basis. But I've seen the attitudes of these people. And you see the phoniness, the extremism. They try to make this whole idea of secondhand smoking, any kind of... It becomes, even now in California, for example, they won't even ban it outdoors in certain places. You can see that people have now gotten fixated with the Navodah Zarah. It's a form of idolatry with a cause. And this gives them a tremendous sense of righteousness. But why? These very same people that are against smoking. Are they the same? Do they watch everything that they eat? Do they watch every... They don't go skiing and thereby risk killing themselves on a ski slope? They don't go flying airplanes? They don't drive... everything they do is perfectly removed from any possibility. And if you can apply the same standards... Because this idea of secondhand smoke is pretty absurd. It's completely exaggerated. The extent to which there's real science to back up this thing. It's absurd. It's absurd. It's taken to absurd proportions. If you go to apply the same proportions, then first of all, you shouldn't.
Reaction to it.
You should not have any kind.
Not the idea of secondhand.
One second. Okay, that's precisely what I'm telling you about. I'm not saying that there's nothing to the idea of smoking, and I'm not saying there's nothing to the idea of nothing at all to the idea of secondhand smoke. But people they're not responding to the rational issue. They're using that as an excuse to go to engage in a form of extremism. Some people should move out of any city where you have pollution, or you're near an airport and you get 1,000 times more of these pollutants in the air. They shouldn't use their cars because you're polluting the air. There's no consistency. There's no rationality. You're just talking about one thing. And you see that attitude of hatred that they have. If somebody lights up a cigarette, then they look at them like he's a pervert. Even if it's dangerous, why is that your most dangerous thing? I mean, you look at it because it's risky behavior. Well, you engage in risky behavior too. These very same people, and I'm against. I just spoke about the Shabbos. Any type of bashing of anyone, gay bashing, lesbian, I'm totally opposed to that. But you can make a case if someone is gay. Let's say you can make a case. I'm not making such a case. If this person engages in very risky behavior, it's been a tremendous cause for AIDS. Let's say. But so therefore, you're going to look at it. If a person comes in to a gay bar and two gays walk in, this anti-smoker, does he look at them with that same type of disdain because they're engaging possibly risky behavior? No, that's acceptable. He's a liberal individual and we have to tolerate everyone. Well, fine, I'm not arguing that, but then light up a cigarette, then that's the worst crime in the world. You can see from the reaction. I remember, see, people can't fool me. I'm not fooled by these phony displays of righteousness. I remember one time we were on a layover, we were playing Mystic Connection. We were going to Florida, Pesach. So, Mystic Connection, so they had to put us up in some kind of a motel overnight. You get the connection, the flight connection. So we were staying in this place, and we were sitting in the lobby, and somebody had smoked a cigarette in the, not even in the lobby, in the breakfast room. And this was a while later. Then this jogger comes in. He's going to be jogging. This is pretty good. And he starts doing a thing, he's sniffing, and he starts choking, and he's coughing, and everything. And he's like going crazy. Like, somebody smoked me here? And so I said, yeah. But at that point in time, in that place, there was no law against it. And he starts going to Atari, out of the committee, and he's like furiously angry. No one was smoking at that point in time. I'm telling you, this is not a normal reaction. But that's how people react today. This is a psychological phenomenon. It's a psychosomatic phenomenon. That's my opinion. I'll tell you what I base it on. Non-smokers today will have these kinds of allergic reactions. They have every kind of allergic reaction in the world. Well, a lot of new allergies have developed in today's society. I want you to know that. People are allergic, you know, to many things that they were never allergic to before. Peanuts have become yeah. All right, but I don't know how angry they get at the people that chew peanuts, but wait, the peanut idea was good. But I'm telling you...
My daughter's flu, you can't bring peanuts.
Like most of them.
I am telling you that... Well, that's a separate question about peanuts.
So no kids should happen to you.
I remember when I was a kid. When I was a kid, everybody smoked. Everybody smoked. Men, women, and children when they reached the appropriate age. Of course, parents at that time also... instructed you had to sneak into the bathroom or whatever it is, but there was a cool thing to do when you were 13, 14, you started smoking. That's the way it was in my time. And you didn't have, even though people knew, it's all, by the way, this is all phony. The idea of suing tobacco companies is the biggest fraud in the world.
Right.
It is the biggest fraud in the world. It's very destructive to the whole idea of free will. Whatever the tobacco company have done. Let's assume, for argument's sake, from the time that they started to put the labels, even though people knew before that, from the time they put the labels on the cigarettes, the box, that caution, it's dangerous. Everybody knows this. Everybody knows there was a link between smoking and cancer. And therefore, nobody can blame a tobacco company. What do you mean? It's a legal product. They sold their product. And who does they advertise to you? It's fine, they advertise. That's advertising. And what, you made the choice. You smoked, you chose to become addicted. You, your doctors told you to stop smoking. You did not have the ability to separate yourself. It's your fault. And if you do want to blame anyone, you do want to, sue your parents. That was their responsibility. What's the tobacco company got to do with it?
They don't have deep pockets.
Sue your parents. They're the ones that should be sued because they didn't raise you properly. It's their fault. Getting back to my youth, everybody smoked. So if you were a kid, you were raised in a household, because no one ever had the sense, even in those days, no one ever had an inkling to just think of secondhand smoke. They did know that first-hand smoking was dangerous. But nobody held that second-hand smoking was dangerous. And I don't know to what extent this can prove, but measures and all that. I doubt the science very, very much. I think it's minimalistic. But I don't think that people are searching for the truth on the area because it's become a cause. But I maintain as follows. Wherever you went, if you went to the shul, Malavamalk on Saturday night, everybody smoked. You went to a yeshiva to a base medrash, you couldn't see across the room. From being smoked, and then that was those before filters, and now they have these lights and ultralights. I mean, we're talking Pall Mall, Chesterfield without filters. Lucky Strikes,
Camels.
You take a look at some of the scenes of the old boxing matches. You have these guys going 15 rounds, and the whole ring is filled with smoke. Everybody's smoking cigars and cigarettes. At a basketball game, indoors, everybody's smoking. That's the way the world was in those days. It could have been annoying, too, if you were a non-smoker. Of course, if you went to any event like that, and you came home, your clothes would all smell from cigarettes. But somehow or other, people would go crazy then about that. It's a minor annoyance, so whatever the case was, it was a minor annoyance. It didn't have the same effect. But certainly, you never saw a person coming into a room, a non-smoker, and coughing like crazy, like you couldn't take the secondhand smoke. I never saw that happen. If that were a normal reaction, then it should have been happening back then when everybody was smoking all over the place. You went on an airplane. Can you imagine somebody sitting next to an airplane lighting up? Well, guess what? It's only recent. That you can't smoke.
These planes had ashtrays.
All planes had ashtrays, and they had a smoker. I think they then finally introduced the non-smokers. Yeah, too much of it's menial. An airplane so smack. I mean, from this going on, you can smoke. From this going on, you can't smoke. It's the same thing. So being on an airplane where you can't get decent air today, it's recycled air, and people are complaining, and everybody's smoking. How did the world exist? How come people are coughing to death all the time from all the smoke that was there? How did the world exist? People weren't coughing. People were not smokers, so they didn't smoke. I never remember this outrage. This sense of outrage.
There's more asthma today than there was back then.
There's more asthma today. This sense of outrage that exists today.
That's needed second.
And this sensitivity to smoking, in my opinion, it's because it's the idealism bug. There's more, it's not the cigarette smoking, it's the idealism that I, and all these self-righteous people who were, most of the worst of these people are the ones that were smokers, former smokers, and gave it up. My God, when they get off smoking, then they become, they go to the other extreme. Their anger and their extremism is much, much worse. Because it brings out a certain type of aggressiveness in a person. It allows them to feel superior, self-righteous, and he also can't tolerate the idea that other people are enjoying something that he himself can't partake of. So that is my analysis of all of these different groups, environmentalists too. You can detect them when they go into this extreme, and the reaction is not in line with rationality. And you'll see that with regard to other behaviors in society, which are much, much worse and much dangerous, that there doesn't get them going like this. They don't have such a problem with that. The selectivity, extremism, aggressiveness, hostility, all these things show you that it's absolute nonsense. And essentially, it's based upon the fact that these people never really spend any time studying the issues. The true idealist, to qualify as any kind of idealist, I would assume years and years of thoughtfulness, of study, of analysis, and of learning how to control yourself, and what's legitimate behavior, what's not legitimate behavior. When you don't have these things, then you have these self-proclaimed idealists. I say again, respect them and suspect them. I don't mean to say that a person should never, the question being raised, should a person never get involved in these causes. I'm not saying you should never get involved in causes. I said you should be very, very skeptical. But there are possible causes that are legitimate and that are conducted with intelligence and restraint. There could be a movement in your society to do something to improve the schools or to lower taxes. And I'm just making things up. You should examine to the best of your ability and see whether it's rational, whether it's normal, whether it makes sense. And then you join. But in general, when you should be very, very careful. A lot of these idealists, so-called idealistic movements, aside from that, we do find also, which furthers my point, that it's very rare to find genuine idealism. All these different charities that sprung up in the wake of 9/11, billions and billions and billions of dollars for everything under the sun. Where's that money gone? And how much of it actually went to where it was supposed to go, where it deserves to go, and how much it was skimmed off on me in the process because of the. There's a, it's more than a culture, it's an industry. There's an idealism or a charity, it's an industry, it's a racket. Like anything else. It's funny. It all boils down to one thing. Human nature is not idealistic. People are not idealistic by nature. People are very selfish by nature. People are very greedy by nature. And people are very aggressive by nature. There's a lot of phoniness that people try to gloss over this, and that's what I'm saying. The problem with people is that they can't be honest about themselves. They can't be truthful about themselves. They go after something they want very badly, they frame their rationalizations, and they close the mind. That's it. This is our cause, and this has been responsible for tremendous, all of the destructiveness in history. So if a person says he's an idealist, well, what do you mean? What do you mean, an idealist? You're a human being, and how can you be an idealist? I want to hear how you became an idealist. You mean you're not selfish, you're not greedy, then you're not human. What happened? How did you become transformed? We maintain that a person can be transformed, that a person can conquer his baser nature, and he can work on himself, but it's a very slow, difficult process. It involves the attainment of knowledge, it involves study, it involves self-knowledge, working on yourself. Oh, something else. You have a genuine psychic. But a genuine psychic is not out there proclaiming himself as an idealist. That would be their disqualification. Another way of detecting whether people are true idealists, that is to say that the reason that they're for something or opposed to something is because of what they claim, or it's really some type of an emotion, is when you when you ask the person what the reason is. So generally speaking, if they're opposed to something because of what they say, because if that's whatever, if you're opposed to smoking because of cancer, that's your opposite, that's it. If you're opposed to cloning, we'll take the discussing the issue of cloning. If you're opposed to it because you're just opposed to the concept, you think that it should just be random, it should be chance, you shouldn't have to try and engineer. Whatever, I'm not taking a stand on one or the other, but that's it. But you'll notice if in the course of the argument they start to bring in every other possible reason, which will help with their side, and also because of forming, then also give me this, and also then people will stop to take care of that. So that one second. What does that do with the issue? Whenever you see a person bringing in 20 reasons, and I just saw on TV they have all these discussions about the going to war against the rat. So there's one individual who's opposed, he's a liberal, he's opposed. So, okay, you may be opposed. I'm not saying that there's only one side of that issue. But in the course of doing so, every time he was cornered, he'd bring out another. He's like, it turns out there's 25 different, if that's the case, then it can't be, then none of your reasons are just. It's not for this reason, it's not for the other reason, it's not for the other reason. Because whenever they're refusing, you go to something else. It means that underneath it all, you're against it for some unknown reason. Or whatever it is, whatever the bias is, you're not saying. If you're saying it's because we're going to damage relations with other Arab states. So that's your point. So if a person refutes that and shows that to the contrary, it won't have that effect. Oh, well, no, but then what about the diminishing of war against terrorism in Afghanistan? You know, when a person utilizes that methodology, but as soon as you seal off one point, he keeps running to another point, then you know that's phony. That is to say that a person has a right to be opposed to something, and you should state what the issues are. And an honest person, once, if you have successfully disproved those contentions, well, okay, they withdraw the point. But when they then look for other bases and other bases and other bases, then it's clear that the reasons that they are offering are not the real causes, they're the rationalizations. And then it's just an emotional thing, whatever, I don't know what the emotion may be. It's a visceral kind of phenomenon, and they are not being honest about it.